Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. My guest today is Catherine Hughes. Catherine, also known as the Caffeinated Advocate, is a best-selling author, blogger, editor, and public speaker. Her long-awaited memoir, Imprisoned No More, A Mother and Son Embrace Autism and Journey to Freedom, has just been released. She is a passionate advocate, innovative storyteller, and community strategist. Please join me in welcoming Catherine Hughes. Hi, Kathy.
Dr. B, thank you.
Well, we're just going to dive right in and things are going to get real. And have you had your caffeine today?
Plenty, more than I care to admit. But we know a lot of our mamas listening probably have had their share too.
Yep. Well, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, I would love to. So I am from a very small town in southwestern Pennsylvania. It's called White Oak. It is one of those don't blink or you'll miss it towns. I always talk about this funny article I saw months ago where they said that my hometown was the most boring town in my state. But I like to add to that, that I am not boring and my house is not boring. So I have my son, Christian, he's 22 and on the autism spectrum. I have my mom, whom everyone calls Mama Betty. Uh-huh. And she is 76, 4'10", and spunky as can be. I have 6 cats and I have 1 dog.
Wow. You're busy.
Yeah. That's not to mention all the other things I'm doing, but my house is a little crazy. I gotta tell you, there's more 4-pod creatures in the house than 2-pod humans.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. Well, when were you aware that your son Christian has autism?
So I talk about in my book how we got to that place in our journey. And truly, for a year and a half, I had suspected that something was wrong. After the age of 2, I knew that he wasn't developing like typical children do. Now, granted, I was a very young mother. I had Christian when I was 19 years old.
Okay.
So I was a young mom, and Christian was also my first child. So, of course, it was my first rodeo, if you will. So. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't sure at first if I was, you know, missing anything or if I was wrong or overshooting or, you know, kind of where I was at. But, you know, that motherly instinct kicks in and something tells you, hey, something's not right here.
Right. So
I was watching him not develop as far as his language, his play skills. And then he developed these really strange repetitive behaviors like flicking the faucet on and off and kind of watching the stream of water and flicking light switches and, you know, the lining things up and spinning the car wheels, but not playing functionally with the cars and zooming them on the mat. So I saw all of these peculiar things and I knew something was wrong, but I kept going back to the pediatrician and I got what so many of our parents do. The laundry list of excuses. So the he's a boy, boys sometimes speak slower than girls.
I got that.
You got that too? Did you get the he might be ADHD, we'll try medication if he can't pay attention in school?
Yes.
Then I got the you're a young mom, so you know maybe you're just not sure what you're looking for. So I just got this, again, a laundry list of excuses of why I might be wrong and that I had nothing to worry about. So it was really a traumatic incident that led to Christian's diagnosis. It wasn't me getting a referral and going to a psychologist or a neurodevelopmental. It was me going through a traumatic community incident that landed me in jail for 4 days where I was accused of child abuse.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So what were the circumstances? Are you able to
Absolutely. And, you know, I've shared some of this outside of the book as well. I have a blog post on the Caffeinated Advocate that it's called From Behind Bars to Behind Communities. And I talk about what led up into that incident. But honestly, Dr. B, what it was kind of a groupthink, if you will, where someone thought they saw something that they didn't. So my parents and I, after a really tough doctor's appointment for Chris, it was with a specialist, 2 hours long. So as you can imagine, he was overwhelmed. And honestly, we all were.
Right.
We went to get something to eat on the way home. And then I was to work at night. I was a retail manager. So I was, you know, getting ready for an evening shift. And we went to get something to eat. And Chris at this point was just so overwhelmed and he was just done. He was absolutely done. So he was throwing himself on the floor. He was engaging in self-injurious behaviors, a lot of head banging, a lot of self-stimming, and he just could not calm down. So I tried to take him outside to calm him down and put his favorite tape on in the car so he could listen to his music and calm himself, doing what he enjoyed. And I thought that's going to get him back to that place to where he needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I also had to stop him from headbanging because I was afraid he was going to either knock himself out, give himself a goose egg on his head, and really hurt himself.
Right.
So as I was trying to lift him out, he was flailing a lot and he kept falling through my arms, and then he would go back to banging his head on the floor. So as I was practically wrestling him to get him out of the restaurant, people thought what they were seeing was a mother hurting her child.
Mm-hmm,
that's what they thought they saw.
Uh-huh.
So instead of someone asking, what can I do to help you? Are you okay? Is he okay? What's wrong? Can I do anything?
Right.
Nobody did that for me. What happened instead was a restaurant manager ran after me, screaming that I was a child abuser, ran in to call the police.
Oh
my child
gosh.
Is taken from my arms and I'm put in the back of a police car.
Oh my gosh. Just like that?
Just like that. Just because of what people thought they saw. And you know, even thinking back to it to this day, I just can't understand why not one person, not one, asked, what can I do?
Right. Right.
How can I help?
And you couldn't even explain yourself at that time. Like, I mean, the manager couldn't even figure out you couldn't talk to the manager and say, well, wait, you don't know the full story here.
Right. And I did. I did try to defend myself and say, you have no idea, first of all, what you're talking about. You're absolutely wrong. He's very overwhelmed. And it was at that specialist appointment that day where he said to me, Kathy, something is wrong. And he said these words to me that will always stick with me. This is not normal.
Hmm.
With your child, this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
need help. Mm-hmm. But I didn't make it home to make that phone call to try to get an appointment for him because of what someone thought they saw. And instead of going home to make a phone call, I went to jail.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That's so scary too. I mean, so then you're in jail and how long were you there for?
Several days. I was in on Friday. I was out by Monday night, only thanks to an incredible lawyer and friends and family who stopped at nothing to get me out. When I was placed in on that Friday night, I was not granted bail, which really,
what?
I'm sure, yeah, sounds hard to believe, right? I was not given any bail. Now think about all of the people out there who have done terrible things.
Right.
Who are granted even, you know, $400,000 bail.
Yeah, exactly.
And here's the mother who is trying to calm her tantruming child who is upset and overwhelmed, and mom's overwhelmed. So
yeah,
let's just leave her behind bars because she's a danger to society.
I mean, and you're a young mom. I'm sure you're like freaking out, and then just not for just yourself, but you know, what's going on with Christian? Is he okay? You know,
I was scared out of my mind because he had other health problems at the time that we were treating. So he had gut issues, he had chronic constipation, he had skin rashes and eczema and was always uncomfortable. He had a thyroid condition. He had all of these things and was on medications and only ate certain foods at the time and only wore certain types of clothing. So, you know, all of those things. I was scared to death thinking nobody's going to know what to do for him like I would. And if he's not with my parents, you know, nobody is going to know what to do for him. He can't speak. He can't advocate for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even have 10 words at that time. He had babbling, not even real words. So I thought, what is he going to do?
Right. And he's scared. He's probably wondering where you are. I mean, so you were, who took care of him while you were in jail?
He was placed in foster care because since Christian and I lived with my parents, he was not allowed to come home with them. He was not allowed after this traumatic incident to return home with his grandma and grandpa who, you know, would have been there to love him and keep him comfortable and reassure him and keep him safe and put him in his own bed. Instead, they placed him in foster care all because of accusations, not a mark on him, not a single mark.
Oh my gosh. And so how long was he in foster care for?
It was a little over a week before he was returned.
That long?
It was. And thankfully, we also not only had a wonderful lawyer, it was the daughter of the best lawyer in Pittsburgh, truly, at the time. We also had a great caseworker who once she met me and spent some time with me, and then she visited our neighbor, she visited the pediatrician, even though I don't have a lot of great things to say about him. We've since left. Obviously, we left a long time ago. But they interviewed, you know, so many people. And the first thing she said to me was, how did this happen? When she finally had the chance to speak with me after I was home, she said, how in the world did we get here? Like, how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And then leading up to our first child and family court hearing, same thing. The judge brought me before her after, you know, hearing all the arguments, and she brings me to her stand and she says, Miss Hughes, why are you in my courtroom?
Right.
You know, why are you here? I don't understand. How is this even happening?
Uh-huh. So what happened after that? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. What she did was she mandated a few things in order for me to have the charges let go. The first was she commanded that I go into parenting classes, which they were pretty much useless to me. They obviously weren't focused on special needs.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I'm like, oh, okay, so we're kind of past the whole how to diaper a baby, mm-hmm. how to bottle feed a baby.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm kind of past all that. I need the autism 101.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't know he had autism.
I didn't.
That's a thing.
Right. And that's what I needed after I learned about the diagnosis. But one of the other things she had asked us to do was to find someone to give him a psychological evaluation. And she said, I'm court ordering one. And if you cannot find someone yourself within 2 weeks, I am ordering it. I will find you one. This cannot wait. So, you know, the beautiful thing about all of this was I surpassed all those waiting lists because she demanded we find an evaluator and said, something is seriously wrong with your child. I'm not a doctor, but I know that there is something seriously wrong. So it was thanks to that, you know, thanks to her saying that, you know, I'm going to court order this.
Right.
That's what got us in for a faster evaluation. And, you know, I talk in the book about that experience of calling for the first time. And, you know, when they said, how can we help you? I lost it. I burst into tears because I thought, how can you help me? Like, do you have any idea what it took to get me to this phone call? So, you know, I shared everything, you know, we made the appointment and of course we go to the appointment, we get our checklists and assessments. And that's when, you know, I really started to recognize that, hey, this could be something that's lifelong.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I suspected developmental delays. Autism was mentioned to me, but very seldom. And I had very little experience with autism. So my experience was essentially Rain Man and one class in college in child psychology, a 45-minute class about autism. That's all I knew. And again, thinking back, I'm a young mom. Chris is my first. I had no support from my pediatrician. So you know, this was all new to me. And as I'm, you know, going through the child checklist and the behavior checklist, and then I get Gilliam Autism Rating Scale and went, well, what's this? This can't be right. You know, this can't be what this is. And then, you know, like most of us do when we, you know, find out our kids are on the spectrum, we start going through those checklists and we see that we're checking, you know, a lot of sometimes, and then we go off and off and off and off and oh my God, every single day. Oh my God, 57 times a day. And it starts to sink in, but it didn't totally sink in until he took my hand after that first appointment at the second with that follow-up to say, Kathy, this isn't your fault. You're the mother of a child with autism.
Oh my gosh. Probably just mixed emotions, maybe. I mean, what, I mean, right?
Yeah.
Relief because
it was, it was definitely a relief to know, but then there were so many other feelings, you know, the fear of the unknown. Will he ever attend a regular classroom? Will he have friends? Will he have relationships? Will he drive? Will he have a job? You know, all of those fears. And then the anger at the pediatrician, I felt like I was betrayed because he didn't lead me to the right place. And it took all of this to get somebody to listen to me. So there was a lot of anger, a lot of anger that I had to get past. I was, you know, obviously sad. You know, I wasn't sure what the future would hold. But then at the same time, there was this guilt because I was happy to know there's a name for what's going on. So, you know, it's just like with the grief cycle. And I talk about that in the second part of my book, is I talk about the grief cycle and the need for, you know, self-care for the caregiver, because there's so many feelings that we experience. And, you know, I still roller coaster through those emotions all of the time, even with Chris as an adult, because it's not that he doesn't have, you know, problems, concerns. It's not that he's completely symptom free. It just, it looks different now. Right. But back then I felt all of these things and I didn't know what to do with them.
Right, right. And I'm sure like a lot of listeners out there could relate. I can relate.
Yeah.
I mean, when you find out, because, you know, you see your child and he was young at that time. I mean, yeah. My son, I remember he was 2 and I started noticing some things. But even then, like his diagnosis, we really didn't get the autism diagnosis until he was a little bit older, because it's really hard when they're small, right?
It
it's
is.
Like, you know, they're... you get ADHD or it's just something else, you know, not necessarily the autism diagnosis. So,
right. It's boy syndrome, right?
Right.
Exactly. The boy. It's just boys will be boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. But you had to go through so much just to get that neurological eval.
Yeah. That's what it took to get somebody to listen to me. And what, you know, really blows my mind is even today in 2020, I'm still hearing stories like this where, you know, parents and caregivers have a run-in with the law because of something that happened with their child or their, you know, adult loved one. And, you know, it just, it doesn't make sense to me in this day and age with as far as we've went with awareness and education, we still have so far to go.
Right.
Just when I think we've went far enough, I hear another story and I go, ugh.
Yeah.
We're still there, man. We're still there. And I just, I don't want anyone to experience what I went through. I don't want anyone
to
go through what we went through to get somebody to listen.
I mean, and not to mention just probably the cost of, you know, going through that to,
to
clear your name and.
Oh yes. We're talking 5 figures.
What?
We're talking 5 figures to clear my name.
Oh my gosh.
To move through, you know, the cost of the lawyer and the parenting classes. And of course, you know, we needed to, at that same time, I'm trying to work. I'm trying to, you know,
in
get
retail,
through the classes. In retail.
Like, how are you supposed to pay for those things?
Well, I'll tell you what, by the end of that year, I had no choice but to quit my job because I was to a point where, you know, when you have someone coming in and out of your house providing therapy, and then you have to take your child here, and then there's this eval, and then there's a speech appointment, and, you know, then there's the preschool saying, come get your child. He's having a really bad day. Trying to manage a haphazard schedule with all of the needs of my child, plus, again, trying to clear my name, going to a mandatory class. Yeah, it was absolutely impossible.
Oh my gosh.
Was just absolutely impossible. But thankfully, by the end of that summer, I was able to get the charges dropped. My name was cleared, but that also factored into that cost. So yeah, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars to clear my name, all because what somebody thought they saw.
Oh, right. The manager just...
Yeah.
That's the thing. You can't just judge somebody without knowing. You don't know what's going on in somebody's life.
Yeah. It really taught me a lesson. And I think you know, we've all been there, right? And I'm sure, you know, if you're being honest too, you've had that moment where you see a child in the middle of a store and think, what is up with that mom? Is she just going to give in and give him that candy bar that he's screaming for? Oh my God, pointing the finger. What are you doing? We've all done it. But, you know, ever since what happened to me, I, you know, really try to check myself and realize that, you know, that person that maybe in that 5 seconds that I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? I go, you were that person.
Right, right.
You were that person, Kathy. Yeah. Don't do to them what was done to you.
Yeah.
Don't do to them what was done to you.
That is an important thing to,
to
bring up. So, oh my gosh. Like, wow. Yeah. That's a lot. And like you said, he was like 2 years old at that time.
He was 3.
Okay.
Yeah. His birthday's in January. So this happened. He was diagnosed at the end of May, early June of 2001. So he was getting close to 3.5 at that point. Oh, but again, I suspected for so long. I just, you know, I didn't get what I needed at the time.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, your child, you know, the best, right?
Yeah.
So you're an expert. That's what I've like come to learn, or, you know, I've like accepted. It's like, hey, I'm an expert on my child. I know what, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I may not be a doctor. I may not be a teacher or a therapist or, you know, later on learning what a behavior analyst is. I wasn't any of those things, but I'm Christian's mom and that counts for something. I am M period, O period, M period.
Right.
There's all the credentials you need.
Right, right. Exactly. Well, how did you go from parent advocate to professional advocate? Because now you're director of family support and community engagement, right?
Yes. Yeah. I actually, so as I said, I quit my job in retail in 2001. I stayed home for 2 years.
Okay.
And everything I did, you know, it was all about Christian and making sure that he had the services he needed, the people he needed, the tools we needed. And I learned so much from our team members and was so inspired by them and said, when I finally go back to work, I want to find a way to give back. And at the time, I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew that I wanted to give back.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate in that there was an agency in my area that was looking for someone to do some parent mentoring.
Okay.
And I was very transparent with them and said, you know, I don't have a psychology or social work degree. Mm-hmm. I actually only have an associate's. I have other certifications and classes that I've taken, but I'm associate's level. I said, I've never worked in this field before, but I am a mother and I have lived experience. And I want to give back and I have learned a lot and I just need someone to give me a chance. And somebody gave me that chance to start providing some mentoring and resources. And I said, let me be that voice on the other end of the phone when someone calls and says, I need services for my child. I need help. I feel hopeless. I wanted to be that reassuring, calming voice on the other end that says, you're not alone, for one.
Right, right.
And there is help and there is hope. And we're going to get through this together. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate that someone gave me that chance. And I worked at that agency for about a year before another opportunity came up. And it was actually with the founder of Achieving True Self, Rick Murray, whom I work for now. And we were, you know, at this other agency together. I worked there with him for 12 years. And then some of us went our separate ways and came back together. But, you know, going backwards, it really was being inspired by the people that were helping my son and learning from them. And that's how I started to build a career. It was that passion and that spark for wanting to just give back to other people. And I learned along the way. I attended as many trainings as I could. And, you know, whether it was a training, whether it was a supervision with the staff, I just tried to learn all I could so that I could be the best mentor that I could possibly be for these parents. So over time, I was a part of other trainings for not just the staff, but for the community. And that's where I truly emerged as a public speaker. And I, being very honest with you, I was never a speaker prior to getting into the field. Back in my retail days, back in my college days, I was afraid to even speak in front of, you know, employees or a class. I was one of those people that would shake and my palms were sweaty. And I thought, you will never get me in front of a room of people. But as I started to share my story with our staff and with our families and support groups, the more I started to share and vocalize it and let go of that trauma and start to heal from it, the stronger my voice became. So that's really what got me into, you know, becoming more of a public speaker, you know, and leading me up to, you know, kind of where I am today. The writing piece, I have always had the writing bug. So I'm the daughter of two English professors and I always loved writing. Even through school, I was that girl that was always on the school paper and, you know, I loved writing. I just thrived on writing. My dad wrote poetry. My mom was the nonfiction editor. So, you know, I got a lot of that from them. But years later, I was doing more and more with writing trainings through my work and, you know, company newsletters and articles and website content and social media content. And all of that brought me to the point where I realized I need to start a blog. I need to share my story, you know, and expand my audience beyond just, you know, my work audience, you know, the people in that network. I wanted to share our story with the world. So I formed the Caffeinated Advocate in 2018. A year later, I was approached about doing a collaboration of stories from autism moms, from a mom in Maryland. And so we put together this collaboration and that was kind of my first taste of being published. On my dad's deathbed in 2009, I made him a promise. I was holding his hand and I made him a promise of two things. One, that I would publish In Prison No More, because I said, I'm going to be a writer someday, Daddy. I'm going to do it and I'm going to publish our story. That was the first promise. The second half of that was he told me he wanted his poetry published. So I promised him and said, Daddy, I'm going to do it. So it took me almost 20 years, but I got In Prison No More out and I've been a part of several collaborations and I plan to publish his poetry in January of 2021 on his birthday.
Oh my gosh. Wow. You are really busy. I mean, your schedule is full.
It is really busy, but I'll tell you what, it fulfills me. It is rewarding. Mm-hmm. It is humbling. It feels good to help other people. It feels good to give back. And some days it is hard. Some days I have to practice better self-care and I have to walk away because sometimes I get so immersed in speaking with other parents. And right. I don't know if you're like this or not. I am a walking, talking empath. I can't lie. Uh-huh. I am a complete empath. And sometimes I feel a little bit too much of other people's pain. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just have to walk away so I don't burn myself out.
Right. No, that's understandable. Well, mm-hmm. When you became the professional advocate, so there is no formal training program then. I mean, you just...
No, truly I built the career from, networking and learning from my staff and my team members, my leaders, other BCBAs, others that are PhD level. Really, I learned from working with them, but I've also learned a lot from other parents just like us.
Sure, right.
We're some of the strongest resources out there. And, all of that networking it's so critical. But I did take a class, C2P2. I don't know if you've had C2P2 or not.
No, tell us about that.
Sure, I'd love to. So it's Competence and Confidence Partners in Policymaking. So every state offers this class and it is for parents and caregivers, but also self-advocates.
Oh, wait, is that different? Because I'm doing a Partners in Policymaking class.
That's it.
Oh, but this one is called, you said
C2P2. They call it C2P2 in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. For
the Competence and Confidence Partners in Policymaking. So here
I'm
in
PA. I'm doing that. saying?
And isn't it wonderful? Isn't it a wonderful
yes.
course?
Oh my gosh. It's awesome. I mean, I'm just learning so much and it's a great way to network and meet other parents because, I really learned that it is so important to share your story because there's somebody out there who needs that story.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And I've met so many parents who also either, want to become bloggers or they want to share their story in mm-hmm. some way, or maybe they want to write a book. But, I tell them anyone can share a story. And it's important that we all share our stories because you never know what story is going to be the one that somebody needs to hear. And if you help one person, even one person a day, that makes a difference. And
right.
Going back to C2P2, oh my gosh, I met so many amazing parents, but also the self-advocates. We had four in my class.
Okay.
And one of them was a poet and her work is amazing.
Uh-huh.
The other one, she's an educational advocate as well. And she would always drop these nuggets of inspiration that would just blow my mind. And one of them that I will always carry with me is she looked at us one day and said, "My autism is not like a hoodie." And she paused and I went, "What in the world?" I'm like, "Where are you going with this?" And uh-huh. she said, "This is why I use the word autistic self-advocate or autistic adult." She said, "People always ask me about person first language and, whether or not I'm an adult with autism or if I'm an autistic adult." And she right. said, "My autism is not a hoodie. I can't take it off."
Uh-huh.
"I can't remove it."
Right, right.
She said,
right.
"Autism is like my skin. It's part of me. You just don't take the diagnosis on and off. It's not removable." And she said, "This is a part of me and this is a part of who I am. And maybe it's not my whole identity, but this is part of my identity. And this is how people need to accept me." So
right.
That really sticks with me.
Yeah, no, I get it. Being in the partners class, that's when I first learned about that way of thinking also. It's just a different perspective on things. I always think of my son when I talk about autism. I'm so used to saying my son has autism, because it's like I don't think of it as a negative thing. I
right.
just it's just I right. that's just how I got used to saying
right.
it.
Same here. And that's what I do as well. I'll use person first language unless someone corrects me, whether it's, the parent or caregiver mm-hmm. or whether it's, the person themselves. If they say, "No, this is how I refer to myself."
Right.
"Thank you for correcting me. I will use this moving forward." If you right. want to be an autistic adult, an autistic person, an autistic teenager, an autistic self-advocate, if that's what you're telling me and that's what you're communicating to me, then that's what I will use.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Well, speaking of since we're talking about advocacy, part of advocacy, for our listeners is trying to take a difficult situation and challenging situation and becoming an agent of change. Do you have advice for us, in regards to becoming an effective advocate then in terms of, you know, when I think about the partners in policymaking class, we talk a lot about being an effective advocate in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, legislation and being yeah. able to speak with the politicians and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's an important thing. And I think like yeah. as parents or, you know, as a self-advocate, parent advocate, and we can be intimidated and, you know,
absolutely.
We don't know what are you supposed to do? How do you do it?
Right. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that's a question I'm often asked, especially when someone is just getting started with advocacy, especially with the legislative piece and, you mm-hmm. know, truly changing, you know, local or state policy. Yeah, a lot of parents come to me and say, I can't go to a legislator's office. First of all, I don't know what to say to them. And mm-hmm. second of all, who's going to watch my child, right?
Right.
I don't know if you hear that. I sure hear that a lot. And so what I tell them is, number one, you need to go in there and be yourself and share your story.
Right.
You need to be honest. You know, if you're a voter, yeah. you know, you're their constituent and yeah. you have a story to tell. They serve you. So yeah. they want to hear your story and they need to hear your story. So you just go in there and tell it.
Right, right.
And the more you tell it, the more you get comfortable with your voice, the stronger and louder it will become.
Exactly. I mean, I think it helps if you bring a picture or if you could bring your child with you, like you said,
yes.
that, you
yes.
know, a picture and say, hey, this is my child. I think it like just makes it more like, it's not like the person is trying to imagine it. I mean, it becomes
right.
more real.
Right. That's the second part is I believe that someone should bring their loved one whenever possible. So they have, you know, a face they put, as you said, it's a person with it. It's not just an image in their head,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if they're having a bad day and they throw something on the floor or they throw themselves on the floor, welcome to our world. This is my child's reality. This is him or her being upset, yeah. overwhelmed, sensory overload, not knowing how to effectively communicate, not knowing how to express their wants and needs. This is autism. This is our life. And this is why we need, you know, these things that we're advocating for. This mm-hmm. is why it's so important, because you can see without the supports, you know, this is where we're at.
Right.
So
right.
if you can't bring your child, bring a picture, like you said, or bring a poster, or show a video on your phone, show pictures mm-hmm. on your phone, mm-hmm. or, you know, bring a laptop and show a video, whatever that is, personalize the story as much as you can and tell it over and over and over again. The more you say it, the stronger you become.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, again, like when we talk about advocacy, you know, as a parent, you're so used to, you're the one like advocating, but there comes a time that we have to teach our kids to self-advocate.
Yes.
I mean, what are your thoughts on when's a good time to let your child participate, let's say in their mm-hmm. IEP meeting or, you know, mm-hmm. Just be, you know, more involved
yeah.
in their own, you know, in their needs?
Excellent question. I'm really an advocate for speaking to your child as early as possible about not only being a part of meetings, whether it's, you know, a treatment planning meeting, whether it's an IEP, whether it's a doctor's appointment, whatever that is, as early as being self-advocacy. So for IEPs, I don't believe in waiting until, you know, age 14 of transition. Absolutely not. Bring them to every meeting, even starting in kindergarten. Have mm-hmm. them be a part of that process. This is about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. and whatever they need, whether it's, you know, we're communicating in pictures, we're communicating with a device, we're writing, we're speaking, whatever that is, they need to be involved. We're planning their life. We're doing this for them. It's about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot right. of parents struggle with the diagnosis, and especially in different cultures. And I've seen this especially with ATS doing so much in Maryland. It's truly the most diverse state I have personally ever supported. And I've noticed in many different cultures that it's a struggle to speak about a diagnosis, and
yes.
you're not sure, you know, number one, do you speak to your family members? But number two, do you share that with your child?
Right.
But I feel like, you know, for me personally, I feel like we're doing our loved ones a disservice if we don't communicate that in some way. Because mm-hmm. as they get older and, you know, they're signing for things, whether it's an IEP, whether it's a treatment plan, and someday, you know, if they're verbally communicating or, you know, however they're communicating and they say, what's this? Why mm-hmm. am I signing this? What is
right.
this? What do
right.
I have? Or right. worst yet, I think one of the worst questions for a parent to hear is, what's wrong with me? That just stabs at me because there's nothing wrong with them. They're not broken. They don't need fixed.
Right.
But, you know, at ATS, part of our mission and part of our values is saying everybody needs help sometimes, and we want to be that support on their journey to achieving true self.
Right.
You know, it's all about making sure somebody has that support. And, you know, sometimes parents need advocates to be with them. Sometimes children need extra support in, you know, learning about the diagnosis. So whether that's through, you know, books or stories or videos or peer support groups, you know, whatever that may be, we need to teach them about their diagnosis and teach them to self-advocate as early as possible, because that's truly going to set them up for the best possible life, the best, you know, to be independent and to be successful. You know, we want that for them. I could be hit by a bus tomorrow. You know, we all could, right? You know, or we could be struck by lightning walking out of the house, you know, so we need to equip our kids as early as possible.
Yeah.
And try to push that self-advocacy, but it's hard. It's still hard for me with Chris being 22. I always want to jump in, and when something's wrong, damn, I want to fix it.
I know. I'm the Oh my gosh. But it's so hard. I mean, it's like, I'm trying so hard to let go. I mean, my son, he's a sophomore in college now, but last year when he was a freshman, that was like the hardest thing. Yeah. I was the one who had the anxiety. Him, he was like, oh, I'm so excited. I can't, you know, I'm going to be living in the dorm.
And you're like, they'll be
home. I know. Well, you're a few years ahead of me. Well, a couple of years ahead of me with your son being older. So is Christian, is he driving and is he working?
So he is. He actually has another interview for a position this Friday. He's in between jobs at the moment, and that's a whole other story. I have that, of course, on my blog as well, because that's, you know, if whatever happens to us goes on Facebook or the blog at some point or another, right?
Right.
So he has an interview Friday. He got his license last year, and it was a several years in the making project. It took him many years to study the manual and to pass that written test because of his test anxiety. That was like the number one thing. He would practice on our app. So Pennsylvania has a state app for practicing the driving test and, you know, the manual and learning all the questions. So he would ace all of those, but then he would go to the center to take the test. Yes. And he would fail. And it was always with the same questions. He would always tell me, Mama, it was the same three questions. And I said, you know, if you're acing this on your own, but you're tripping up there, I said, you know, it, something in your head is holding you back. That's your self-confidence. So what do you need to do to get past that? And he finally got to a point where he said, you know, I'm going to do it. He took a couple of weeks off in between taking the test and said, okay, I need a break, because he was pushing himself too hard. So he took that break. And then, you know, one day he goes in, he took extra time. I said, take all the time you need. You know, nobody's rushing you. Nobody's pressuring you. The only one pressuring you is yourself.
Right.
You can do this. And so he finally passed. So then we started the driving lessons. And oh God, the first time we went ourselves, I felt like my heart is back here.
I know. I'm laughing so hard because I just remember like when he first started learning how to drive. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like holding on.
And you know, I said to him, I said, you know, I could teach you, but I really feel like maybe an instructor, somebody besides mom might be a really good idea. And we were so fortunate. We found an excellent instructor who was incredibly patient and, you know, worked extra hard with him. And right before Chris took his test, he said to him the same thing I said, ironically, without me having told him anything about autism whatsoever. I remember he, you know, brought the student driver car back, and Chris goes in the house, and this guy comes up to me and he says, you know, the only one that's going to hold your son back is himself. He said, I know that there's something different about him and I can't put my finger on it. And, you know, being respectful of Chris, I figured if he didn't say anything, I'm not going to. So I didn't. But he said, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what quite is different, but I can tell he's, you know, he's pretty anxious. He's a little high strung. And I'm like, a little. But he said, the only one that's going to hold him back from passing that test is him. And he went in that day. Yeah, a couple days later, he went in, he took his test, and he came back white as a ghost. And I thought, oh God, don't tell me you failed. Oh my God, I want you to pass this so much. Right. And then he just like looked at me wide faced and he goes, Mom, I passed.
Aw.
I burst into tears at the like, I literally started bawling and called my mom. And I remember saying to her, this is for everyone who has told people with autism that they can't do something. This mm-hmm. is for them. And mm-hmm. someone overheard me talking to my mother and she went, way to go, mom. And she didn't know us at all, but said like, way to go. Yeah. I don't even know your son, but I'm proud of him.
But that's an awesome milestone. I mean, I was so happy when my son got his driver's license. One, because he could help like go to the grocery store, right? And, like, pick things up for me. But I mean, again, it's like, yes, another thing, you know, it's like, he's achieved.
Yes. So. Another thing that, you know, back at that time, you know, after, again, just getting out of jail and, you know, moving through these checklists and thinking he's not going to be able to do these things someday because these pieces of paper are suggesting to me that maybe he won't.
Right. Right.
But he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, every little thing that he does, whether it's little or it's big, they're all big things to me. They're all big things. And, you know, us mamas, we understand it. We understand that even the littlest thing matters so much.
Exactly. And maybe like some of the listeners might be younger parents, but I mean, I remember when he was younger, it's like, yes, I was like so scared, but I think it's great that, you know, you know, you're sharing your story, telling your story. And it just, you know, us, cause we're, our kids are older and it's like, we've been through that and not every kid, not every, you know, child is the same, but you know, the thing, the important thing is that you can't put those limits on their, you know, on them when they're so small, you don't know what they can achieve. It's like we just have to keep trying and help them reach their full potential.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. So like, and you said he's working and he has a job
interview? So he has a job interview. So he has worked in a couple of different jobs, some in retail and some in food service. So what he's been applying for are jobs that are either in food service or something that's in a helping field. Okay. Because Chris has always said he wants to be able to give back in some way. There's that giving back again. I wonder where he's heard that one before. But yeah, after doing some work in some stores, he was cashiering for a while. And, you know, he met one day with me and his OVR counselor and his job coach. And he said, I want to do something where I help people. So that's when he started volunteering at actually the facility where my father had passed away. It's a senior Medicaid facility. And he started volunteering there. And when a job opportunity came up, he applied for it and he got the position. They, you know, he kind of volunteered himself into a job, if you will. He got to know everybody and then they got to see what skills he had. And he also kind of got to try out different places. So he tried out activities. He tried out the food service since he had some experience with that. And he was able to find a position there. So he did that for about a year and a half. The past couple of months have been very rough. He had acquired a position with the Postal Service.
Okay.
And he had started his training. But the day that they had him take the driver's test, he didn't pass because nobody trained him on how to drive the truck. They just they handed him the keys and said, here you go, parallel park the truck.
Wait, what?
Exactly. So here's what I said. This is anyone that's asked me, you know, well, Kathy, what would you do if it were you? I said, well, if it were me, I would have handed the keys back to somebody. Because if you tell me to drive on the other side of a vehicle
that's
bigger than anything I've ever driven.
Exactly.
I said, I would have taken out a mailbox, a dog, and a toddler.
Right. Like, well, the funny thing is, in Maryland, I don't think the kids have to know how to parallel park.
No, it's a Pennsylvania thing. So that was part, but it was part of the training here. And they said, well, you can't move forward if you can't do this. So without training him, without giving any warning, they tested, said, you're done. So there went that position. So he's, you know, started applying right away. And then he had some other interviews. He had another interview with somewhere local. It's actually a disability organization. And they called him, said he had the job, set him up for orientation, and then called the next day and said, we called the wrong person. We're sorry.
What?
Yeah, that was my reaction too. I said, how does that even happen? If I did that, my head would be on a platter with my
boss. Wait, did they, I mean, they called the wrong person, but then couldn't, because it was their mistake, you know, their, you know, my bad. I mean, it's
So, like, can't you figure something out? You're a pretty big facility. Can't you find something for him to do?
Exactly.
So then that went away. So, you know, since then, you know, really tough day for him, the day that happened. He got the call. He was in tears. He was upset. But you know what he did? He got in the car within like an hour. And I was at work during the day, but my mom called me and she said Chris was crying and he was really upset. Mm-hmm. Then he got in the car and he had like a folder with him and a pen, you know, for applications and, uh-huh. you know, he left to go apply somewhere else within an hour. Now, if that were me,
awesome.
If that were me after what happened, you know, with the postal service and then, you know, this other job, you know, think you're going to get this job somewhere that, you know, and he knew of the organization because he went there for a period of time for some support. So, you know, after two strikes, you know, one of which felt really good, it felt like the right fit. If it were me, I'd be crying on the couch in my sweats, eating a pint of ice cream and bawling my eyes out and wallowing in my own self-pity. But he, you know, an autistic self-advocate got up and dried his tears and said, fine, I guess I got to go figure something out. Wow. And I have such mad respect for that.
Yes.
A lot of respect. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. We don't have the perfect relationship because I'm mom, right? I don't know anything. You know, right. So,
well, no, I get it.
You know, I'm sure you have those moments too, you know, I just, at the end of the day, I got to tell you, he is my joy. He is my inspiration. And I just have so much respect for the hustle he has because just when I think, you know, there's so many strikes that may be against him, he just comes back swinging.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm so proud of that.
That's awesome. Sounds like he's a great guy. So how did you prepare him for independence and like employment? And you mentioned a job coach, but you know, did you look at job boards or how did you, you know, because that's one thing that that's one of the things that my husband and I have been, you know, are preparing for. Cause you know, now that my son's in college, we're in that transition phase trying to help our son, or, you know, prepare him for internships and the workforce and being independent. Like what did you do?
So it started with us in his senior year, really. He had a really great counselor from the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, OVR. Okay. And it was that counselor that had hooked him up with the job coach. I'm from Goodwill Industries and that job coach still follows him today and, you know, still offers him support, you know, whether it's with, you know, buffing up the resume, whether it's, you know, helping with the job search and giving him tips. So we had the OVR counselor, we had the job coach. He also had an incredible therapist. Unfortunately, she recently retired. So he did have to find a new practice, but he found that on his own.
Wow, that's
you know, just
awesome.
using his web searching skills and got, well, what he found was a practice where it was someone he knew that was in the practice because she worked in one of the schools that he had attended as a child. So as he saw the name, he thought, oh, well, I know this person. This might be a really, you know, good fit for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was having those supports in place from the get-go from high school onwards. So he's still always had this team around him. But, you know, some of this has also been lessons learned. And what I mean by that is there are many times where I've kind of, you know, if I have to let him fall a little bit and, you know, fall and scrape the knee a little bit, that's not easy for me, not just, you know, being mom, but being who I am as an advocate and, you know, in this field.
Yes.
You know, I want to jump in and, you know, sometimes I'll still defend myself to him and say, but Chris, I know what I'm doing. You know, I do this for a living and, you know, I help people and I help parents and I help, you know, adult self-advocates just like you. And then sometimes he'll just text me big capital letters, let me do it myself.
I get, and that's so
hard.
It's hard, but you know what? My son does the same thing to me. He says the same thing. And I'm like, but then there's that part of me that goes, wait, then I have taught him pretty well.
Right. Exactly. So pat yourself on the back and, you know, and I recognize not everyone is going to be where our kids are, right? Yeah, you know, not everyone is going to get to that place. And I realize that everyone's journey looks different, but I am a huge advocate for, you know, you push as far as you can and everyone can find a way to advocate for themselves in some way. Even if that is something as simple as pointing to pictures on a menu to say, this is what I want to eat for lunch today. That's still, even in a small way, it's still advocating. It's still using a voice. It's saying, I want this.
Yes.
You know,
it's your choice.
Yes, exactly. Giving those choices, whatever that may be, it's still advocacy. It just looks different. And everyone has to realize that everybody's journey is just going to look different.
Exactly.
We don't give up. We don't give up though.
Right. I think that's the important thing. That's a huge message is don't give up.
Yeah.
Well, how can our listeners find you?
Sure. So number of ways to find me. If you go to thecaffeinatedadvocate.com, there are links to all of my social media channels. I am on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Pinterest, but that's more of my fun page, if you will. So you won't really find a lot, you know, that's, you know, autism related or writing related. It's, you want a fun recipe that I happen to like, go ahead to my Pinterest page, right? I also have a YouTube. My blog pages are also found through the Caffeinated Advocates. If you're, you know, a parent out there looking for services in Maryland, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, or Virginia, I'm at Achieving True Self. It's just achievingtrueself.com. Again, I'm the director of the family support team. So if families are looking for services, that's how you find me that way. But as far as how to connect with me, just go to thecaffeinatedadvocate.com and find either my social media pages or my Amazon page.
And the and your latest book, is that on Amazon? Tell us where, you know, we
sure.
can pick up.
So Imprisoned No More and all of the books, the collaborations that I've been a part of are mostly connected to my Amazon page. Some of the books I've edited aren't connected because I just served as the editor. I'm not a co-author, but most of my pages are on my Amazon author page. So that you can also connect to as well. Through thecaffeinatedadvocate.com, there's an Amazon link, and that's where you can find Imprisoned No More. There's the Kindle version, there's the paperback version. If anyone, for any reason, is interested in an autographed copy, I do have a private order form, and I can private message that to somebody, and then they can order it for me. And I love writing personalized messages to family.
Awesome. Well, I'm gonna have to
really
get
enjoy
that.
It.
I'm
yes.
gonna pick you up on that.
Awesome. Yes. Yes. I really enjoy it. I love giving a personal message to a parent who has been in my shoes, you know, from way back when, because I know what that feels like and you know what that feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what words of wisdom would you like to share with us, especially if your child is, and if you have a child who has autism and you're a young parent?
So I'm going to give you two phrases, and this is directly from my book in the second part, which is, you know, the, you know, grief cycle and self-care, all of those pieces. Give yourself grace and give yourself oxygen. You need to be able to breathe. You need to be at your best. And I know this is something that gives us the shivers in 2020, but the mask truly does go on us first. If we are not at our best, we cannot serve our children. We cannot serve, you know, our spouses, our loved ones. We need to be at our best. So for our listeners out there who are either new to this diagnosis or truly struggling with caring for someone that has this diagnosis or advocating for them in any way, when you need to take that break, you take it and you don't feel guilty for it. You deserve to be whole. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to be healthy. And then you can truly give to your loved ones and help them get the things that they need.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's yeah. And you know, the thing is, it's so hard as a mom,
it's
because you
hard.
Feel like if you don't take that break, then you're not productive.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, so many parents will say, and I was that person that said, I don't have time, right? I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to take that break. But how am I serving my child if I am in a complete state of overwhelm and I just can't pull it together? How am I doing anybody any good? I'm certainly not doing myself any good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We deserve to give ourselves that break and stop blaming ourselves and stop feeling guilty, because this isn't our fault. You know?
Yeah.
The diagnosis wasn't your fault or my fault. It's who they are. And again, they're not broken. They don't need fixed. They're beautiful as they are.
Yeah. Great advice. Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you so much, Kathy, for sharing your story, your vulnerability to help and to help educate and empower us. We wish you and your family all the very best. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmomd.com.